SoCalHyundai.com to book your appointment today.
Hey, Calgary, Dan Katz here for South Trail Hyundai with a big thank you to everyone that joined the South Trail Hyundai family in 2021. Thank you, thank you. Something we didn't expect was all the great trade-in vehicles we received. If you or anyone you know is looking for an almost new truck, car, or sport utility, South Trail Hyundai is the place to stop. With a 160-point mechanical fitness inspection, balancer factory warranty, and interest rates from 2.99%, South Trail Hyundai is your pre-owned destination. South Trail Hyundai, just east of 52nd on 130th Avenue Southeast, and check us out on Facebook and Instagram as well.
This is CFAC 960 AM, broadcasting from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Stream at sportsnet.ca/960. Owned and operated by Rogers Sports and Media. Calgary Sports Radio, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Always live from the Iconic Studio, brought to you by Iconic Electric and Controls. Currently hiring in Calgary and across Alberta with competitive wages and extended benefits. Visit iconicec.ca/careers. Sportsnet 960 The Fan. All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Hour 3 of the Big Show is underway. Thanks for tuning in, as always. So many ways to listen. Appreciate that you do. 960 on your AM radio. Stream us at sportsnet.ca/960. Or tell your smart speaker to play Sportsnet 960. Of course, every hour of our show, posted immediately afterwards. And if you missed anything, you can go back and catch it wherever you get your podcast: Spotify, Apple Pods, Google, Amazon. Subscribe now, leave a comment, and never miss a moment or a guest. Welcome back inside the Iconic Electric and Controls downtown studio. My name is Will Mald. It's time for Big Show Headlines, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Finance or lease a 2021 QX50 and get no charge prepaid maintenance from Calgary's original Infinity destination, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane. Presenting today's headlines, we pass things over to Logan Gordon. Logo, what's making news on this Wednesday?
Well, we'll start with the NHL. Three games on tap for tonight, including a classic rivalry that probably won't look as close as it did back in the 80s. It's the Montreal Canadiens and the Boston Bruins. Montreal playing in their first game since January 1st when they visit the Boston Bruins tonight for a 5 p.m. puck drop on Sportsnet. They had five games postponed because of attendance restrictions in Canada. This one was scheduled to be played in Montreal until it was moved to Boston. Habs sit at 7-23-4 on the year. They've lost three straight and 10 of 11. They are last in the NHL in goals per game, while the Bruins have won 5 of 6, coming off an impressive win at Washington in a 7-3 win. Bruins forwards David Pastrnak and Brad Marchand will look to become the first set of NHL teammates in history to simultaneously score multiple goals in three straight games. It's been a while since the Bruins have seen the Habs, but head coach Bruce Cassidy says you still got to pay attention, still got to be ready to take on your rival.
Well, they should be aware it's Montreal. It's a natural rival of ours. It's a division rival, so you know, that should always get your attention first. But you're right. You know, them having a break and getting bodies back was probably good for them mentally. It wasn't going well for them. They can sort of establish a reset. I think that is a little bit what we did. We certainly weren't in Montreal's position coming out of the break, but I think getting away for us, getting some guys healthy, having the Christmas break, getting some practice time to revisit some things, had a lot to do with our success coming out of the break. So I anticipate they'll be better. How much better, I don't know. We haven't seen them in a while.
Bruins Habs tonight, been a tough year so far for Montreal. Well, they've had a long break. It doesn't get any easier coming off of that break, taking on the Boston Bruins.
No, it certainly doesn't. And I know he will not play tonight, but they are inching closer to getting Tuukka Rask back in the fold. I believe he's going to play tomorrow for the Bruins. So not an easy assignment for a Montreal team who might have one of the worst seasons when we're talking about a Stanley Cup finals appearance and then the following year to have just 7 wins in 34 games. Like, we're talking about a team who almost has as worse or equal points percentage to the Arizona Coyotes, a team who everybody and their dog knows is tanking this season. Look at all the moves that Arizona made in the offseason. They're tanking. And they're at 258. The Habs at 265. A disaster of a year. They are 2-13-3 on the road this season. Do not like their chances in this game tonight. So always a fun rivalry. I know these two fan bases, regardless of where they are in the standings, love these games. But yeah, certainly not where Montreal was hoping to be at the midway point of January with the second worst points percentage in the league.
It's a 6:30 puck drop tonight between the Seattle Kraken and the Dallas Stars at the American Airlines Center tonight. Jason Robertson of the Dallas Stars looking to extend his point streak to 8 games. Forward Joe Pavelski has a 6-game point streak going for Dallas as well. They've won 4 of their past 4 home games and are 12 of 13 since November 13th. That's second in the NHL for home winning percentage during that span. It's been the opposite of that season for the Seattle Kraken. Well, they're sitting at 10-20-4 on the year. They've lost 6 in a row, 0-5-1 in those 6 games. Head coach Dave Hackstall, speaking to the media today, said, look, I'm not talking about consolation prizes or anything else like that. It's simply about picking up wins.
You know, and I said it after the other night, you know, there's no consolation prize in playing well or having little pieces of your game feel good. It's about winning hockey games. So, you know, we got an opportunity here. We haven't played a lot of hockey in the last 10 days. That really, you know, it really doesn't matter. You know, we've got an opportunity here tonight to go out and compete together and put together a real good, strong 60 minutes and earn a win. And we're really going to have to do that here in this building.
Some of the expansion shine coming off for the Kraken there, Will. The head coach clearly not interested in buying any of the little things that his group might be doing well. He's looking for wins. They'll have a uphill climb against the Dallas Stars tonight.
Yeah, they certainly will. I know Dallas is a team that very much is in the playoff conversation when it talks to, you know, when you talk about competing for a playoff spot. You know, they're right there, 5 points back of San Jose with 5 games in hand. Obviously, a lot of the teams around them in the standings, you look at Winnipeg, Edmonton, Calgary, all those teams with very similar games played. Similar points percentage. Calgary leads the bunch with a points percentage above 600. But yeah, it's a big game for Dallas and for Seattle. Started the year pretty well, and ever since then, they've looked every bit like an expansion team. And the one area I think everybody thought they would struggle in was scoring goals. That hasn't been a massive struggle. What has been surprising was, you know, trying to get the puck out of their net. I know that Chris Drieger had a good year last year with Florida. Does not translate it to this year with Seattle. He has found himself, you know, kind of bouncing between the second and third goaltender. And then Philip Grubauer just hasn't been good coming over from Colorado, signing that big deal. And, yeah, it just has not worked so far in Seattle. And they're going to be sellers come the deadline. And I can appreciate Hackstall's outlook of where things are at and kind of the brand of hockey they need to play. And they certainly want to start to build some sort of culture and some sort of consistency and stability in their game. It just hasn't been there so far, and they've looked every bit like an expansion team this season.
And your late matchup tonight features the Toronto Maple Leafs taking on the Arizona Coyotes. Auston Matthews returns to his home state to face the Coyotes, and he'll try to break a Maple Leafs record for most consecutive goals scored on the road when they take on Arizona tonight. Matthews, of course, grew up in Scottsdale, has scored goals in 8 straight road games, tied with the likes of Frank Mihaljevic for the longest run in Maple Leafs history. He has 4 points against the Coyotes since entering the NHL in 2016-17. They haven't seen each other a lot, Will. This will be the first time that these two teams meet since February 11th of 2020. Toronto 6-2-2 in their past 10. You mentioned it when we talked about the Habs. The Coyotes are in a rebuild year for sure. They are 7-23-3. They're looking to rebound from a 4-2 loss to Nashville on Saturday. Maple Leafs coming off a big shootout win against the Vegas Golden Knights last night.
Matthews always gets up for games in his home city, and I know he talked about that a little bit today, the one that he circles on the calendar going into every single season. So looking forward to this one in Arizona tonight. I do think the Leafs will run the Arizona Coyotes show. Pretty fun game last night in Vegas. That's not a big travel going down to Arizona, so I think Toronto will be fine on the second half of a back-to-back. And I certainly would be betting and leaning heavy towards Toronto this evening. As that's a division, maybe more than any other division right now in hockey, logo, that you want to find yourself in first place when the season's over, because you want to avoid that first round matchup between, you know, whether it's Florida, Tampa Bay. You want to, best you can, avoid that first round matchup. And not to say that Boston's a pushover if that ends up who you play, but yeah, you want to avoid a tough absolute slugfest in the opening round. And so Toronto needs to gain some ground here, and certainly they can do that with a win tonight over Arizona. They've got games in hand on both Florida and Tampa. Their points percentage second best, and they look to build on that tonight with a win over Arizona, and I like their chances in that game tonight.
That one, the late game tonight, it is a 8 p.m. puck drop, Leafs and Coyotes. Off the ice news, you mentioned it a bit when we talked about the Bruins and the Habs game. He will not start tonight. It'll be Linus Ullmark getting the start against the Habs, but Tuukka Rask did take part in morning skate with the Bruins today, and head coach Bruce Cassidy confirmed he will be their starting goaltender tomorrow when the team takes on the Philadelphia Flyers. In a corresponding move, Jeremy Swayman has been assigned to the AHL's Providence Bruins. So the Bruins going to go with Rask and Ullmark for the time being. The benefit of having Swayman, Will, on that contract is that he isn't waiver eligible, and they were able to make this move and go with the two veterans down the stretch.
Yeah, and I think that if you're Boston, you're a little bit more comfortable with that. I know Rask hasn't played at all this season, but certainly a guy who's very familiar with the team, with the coach. I don't think the transition will be tough. I know we talk a lot about goalies switching teams midseason. Again, I don't think that's going to be a massive issue here for the Boston Bruins and Tuukka Rask. And yeah, not to say that Swayman's had a bad year and doesn't deserve to be there, but certainly they feel comfortable with two veteran guys, and they can do that going forward with Ullmark and Rask.
Move to the NFL, where ahead of their Monday night matchup against the Arizona Cardinals, the LA Rams have made a late addition to their secondary, luring former Pro Bowler Eric Weddle out of retirement for a postseason run. He retired during the 2020 offseason after 1 year with the Rams. He had failed to record an interception that year, but did notch 108 tackles over 16 starts in 2019. The 37-year-old set to help an LA secondary, Will, that recently lost safety Jordan Fuller for the remainder of the campaign due to an ankle injury. He made himself a name for himself during his time with the San Diego Chargers over the first 9 years of his career. He would then spend 3 years with Baltimore, earning a Pro Bowl nod in every campaign before linking up with the Rams in 2019. A huge, could be an important addition as the six-time Pro Bowler joins the Rams at their wild card game against the Cardinals Monday night.
You can tell how much it caught everybody off guard, because Ian Rappaport of NFL Network certainly was surprised by the news today.
Wow, Eric Weddle is back. And I think, Andrew, what we've learned here when it comes to the Rams and their planning and how they do things, I think the most important thing, if you're a Rams fan, is you follow Jalen Ramsey on Twitter. Number one.
Did he have that
picture up
first? He tweets
last night at like 1 a.m., and it was basically like, he. And he's given us some weird cryptic tweets when they've done of other bonkers things. He knew this was coming, clearly. This is his guy. Eric Weddle now back after 2 years. And, you know, I think for the Rams, look, physically, who knows what Weddle is going to be mentally. He's great. He always is. This was clearly their last and best option. They had two significant injuries to the position. They literally have to play this week. This came together last night at, like, you know, midnight or something like that. But yes, officially back with the Rams today.
Eric Weddle turned 37 8 days ago. I don't think you can expect too much when it comes to what he can do physically. Not to say that he's been out of shape and been sitting on his couch for 2 years, but it's a long way away from football, and certainly a long way from game action and game speed and game shape. And he is 37, and 37 in football is very old. So I don't expect him to be an impact maker, nor do I expect him to be playing every single down. But when it comes to nickel and dime packages, yeah, I think Eric Weddle is going to be a guy who has a lot of use for the Rams. Obviously some veteran leadership, a two-time All-Pro. He's got some veteran experience back there in terms of what he can, you know, prepare this team mentally for the playoffs, has some playoff experience. Doesn't have a ring, but, you know, is a guy who's been there a handful of times. So I like this pickup for the Rams because you like when you can pick up a guy very similar to what we just talked about with Rask. I mean, this is obviously later in the season. This is playoffs. but a guy who last was in the NFL with this Rams team. It's not like we're talking about him playing for the Rams 10 years ago. That was the last team he played for. Not a lot's changed when it comes to their coaching staff and their defensive scheme. So Eric Weddle being back with the Rams is a pretty good fit. And I think more than anything, just helps you when you're a team that's facing a lot of injuries in your defensive backfield. When you can sign a veteran player like Eric Weddle, who is a physical beast. Yeah, he's not what he was at 31 or 30, but I think he can chip in and help you in a spot where you absolutely need it. And to do it on a short timeline, you play on Monday, you play in the playoffs, and hey, this is a guy that's going to help you come the most important time of the year.
It's been the headlines edition of returns. We mentioned Rask making his return to the Bruins lineup tomorrow. Weddle returning to the Rams, so we might as well keep that theme going, Will. This time in the CFL and the Calgary Stampeders. We talked about it earlier. Derek Dennis back with the team for his third stint. He was previously with the Red and White from 2015-2016 and then from 2018-2019, the product of Temple University. Has 72 regular season games under his belt. 57 of them have come with the Calgary Stampeders. West Division All-Star in 2016 and 2018. League's most outstanding offensive lineman back in 2016. He spent the 2017 season with the Saskatchewan Roughriders and was with Edmonton in 2021, although he asked for a release and was not granted it. In a quote extended by the team, Dennis said, "I'm glad to be home." This one from President and General Manager John Huffnagel, quote, "We welcome Derek back to Calgary. He provides us with depth at the tackle position, and I look forward to seeing him compete at training camp. I know Derek is excited for the opportunity to be back with the Stampeders." A big signing, literally and figuratively, for the Stampeders, Will, who get Derek Dennis back in the fold and will no doubt be an important part of the Stampeders' offensive line next season.
Yeah, adds to the list of some heavy lifting that Calgary's done ahead of free agency opening on February 8th. You know, Trey Roberson, Reggie Bagleton, the reworking of the contract for Bull Levi Mitchell. John Huffnagel has been busy, and I don't expect him to be, you know, super, super busy on free agency day or in the days after the opening of free agency, but to get some of these big pieces in place and know that you've got them come the opening of training camp, yeah, I think Derek Dennis, anytime you can add familiarity, add veteran leadership to your offensive line, probably a position that doesn't get talked about enough when it comes to its importance of success as a team. I like this signing a lot by the Calgary Stampeders, and we'll see what a year off had done for Derek Dennis. I guess it's 2 years off because they didn't play in 2020. So that part is a little bit risky, and you don't really know what to expect. But a guy that's familiar with the organization, it's not going to make it as difficult to come back. And certainly Derek Dennis is fired up to be back with Calgary for the third time in his career.
We'll check in with Derek Dennis Friday here on the Big Show. Just working to confirm a time with the Stampeders offensive lineman, but keep it tuned here Friday. We'll check in with Derek Dennis here on the Big Show and get his reaction to signing with the Calgary Stampeders once again. Finish off headlines, Will, in baseball. Not about CBA negotiations supposedly set to resume tomorrow, but a retirement from a longtime successful pitcher in the league, John Lester, retiring from baseball after a 16-year career that included 200 wins and three World Series rings. The 38-year-old left-hander was a free agent after splitting the 2021 season between the Cardinals and the Washington Nationals. He's a five-time All-Star who broke into the majors with the Red Sox in 2006, beginning a storied 9-year stint that saw him win 110 regular season games and two championships, posting a 3.64 ERA over 242 games with Boston. They would then trade him to the Oakland Athletics midway through the 2014 year. Lester would go on to sign a 6-year deal with the Chicago Cubs the following winter and was an integral part of that team busting their 108-year World Series title drought. So at the age of 38, Will, John Lester, who has some absolutely huge moments on his resume, been on some of the best championship teams over the last decade, calls it a career.
Yeah, three-time champion, you know, obviously an NLCS MVP in there as well. It's always nice, I think, when you're, you know, a guy that, you know, a professional athlete that has counting stats To be able to retire with an even 200 wins, that's probably a pretty good feeling. And you're like, yeah, I could probably hang him up now. If he was at 199, you're like, ah, man, if only I could get to that 200. Well, he got there. Didn't get to the even 2,500 strikeouts, though. He'll fall, 12 short of that, which probably is a little bit tough to take. But a great career for John Lester. And, you know, really the always still, to me, head-scratching thing about John Lester that I will never understand, and I know he probably will never give a good answer on it because it's one of those subjects that you probably just would rather, you know, probably scoff at if you're asked about it. But, you know, all those years in Chicago and even in Boston, like, a pitcher that everybody was comfortable getting a big lead on or running from first base because just could never make that throw to first base from a pickoff standpoint. And it was just so bizarre to me to be that precise, to be that good when it comes to throwing a baseball, but yet couldn't throw to first base. It was just bizarre. But, man, great years in Boston, obviously, to begin his career, then leaves and goes to Chicago. You mentioned the World Series win in Chicago will forever be a legend with the Cubs and in the city of Chicago. We'll never have to buy a drink in probably those two cities, Boston and Chicago. A great, great career. And congrats to John Lester, who retires, as you mentioned, at the age of 38. 5 days ago, turned 38. So a belated happy birthday to John Lester and a hat tip to a great, great career.
Your Wednesday edition of headlines, Will.
Thank you, sir. Couple of just news and notes to wrap things up. Just doubling back, Evander Kane, his signing likely going to have to be on hold as Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet reporting the NHL is in investigation of his crossing of the border. We're talking about from U.S. to Canada over the I guess New Year holiday, you can say, just after Christmas. He tested positive for COVID on December 21st, flew to Vancouver on the 29th. In his termination notice from San Jose, it was alleged he did not have proper medical clearance. NHL is now doing a full investigation, and this will likely prevent a Kane signing in the short term as teams await the results. We're all expecting him to sign with the Edmonton Oilers. At least certainly they are on the extreme, extreme short list of destinations for Evander Kane, but it looks like we will not get anything official on that here in the next couple of days, probably by the end of the weekend as we, you know, get closer to Thursday, maybe not Friday, maybe not. It all depends how long that investigation takes when it comes to Evander Kane. Rem Pitlick claimed off waivers from the Minnesota Wild by the Montreal Canadiens. And, yeah, there's your look at Big Show headlines. Brought to you by Hyatt Infinity, offering winter tire swaps from just $59.95. Book your appointment now at Calgary's original Infinity destination, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane. Meeting for a third time this season back in Buffalo. Weather is going to be cold. What are the Bills doing to prepare for another matchup with the New England Patriots? And who is better suited for the cold? And most importantly, what is the feeling amongst the Bills Mafia? We'll get the latest from Buffalo next. Third hour of the Big Show rolls on. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
This doesn't compare nothing to the Minnesota cold, so I don't really be complaining too much. Minnesota was really cold, like negative 21 on a regular basis, so I'm not too much of a complainer. And I played in one of the coldest games in history, like when we played in the playoffs for Seattle at Minnesota Gopher Stadium. It was like negative something, so this ain't nothing. I'll be all right.
Stephon Diggs of the Buffalo Bills says he'll be all right. Speaking with the media yesterday, forecasts expected to be cold on Saturday night, but after playing with the Vikings for so many years in Minnesota, it doesn't appear to phase Diggs. How will that affect what we might see from these teams, and what does the matchup in terms of the Bills and Patriots look like on Saturday? Let's dive into that right now as we welcome you back to the Big Show, live from the iconic Electric and Controls Downtown Studio, currently hiring fully ticketed tradespeople to fill all roles. Learn more about job opportunities at iconicec.ca/careers. Bills, Patriots, divisional rivals, of course, and I'm sure there is many, maybe an even split amongst the Bills Mafia. Some probably scared to play Belichick and the Patriots in January, while others are feeling pretty good about where things are and maybe a chance to send the Patriots packing this season. For more on that and a look ahead to Saturday, welcome into the program down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, anchor and reporter covering the Bills for 13 Wham in Rochester. He is Dan Fates. Dan, thanks so much for the time, man. How are you?
Good, guys. How are you?
We're good. What is the feeling in Bills land? Are they more nervous or more excited for this matchup with the Patriots?
I think you said it best. It's probably a 50-50 split. There is the excitement of, man, it'd be great to bounce the Patriots from the postseason. But there's also that sense of you're seeing Bill Belichick for a third time, and it seems like he's the guy that's always playing 4D chess while everybody else is playing checkers. So, to be honest, Sunday night I was rooting for the Chargers because I would have much rather faced them having to come across country. But, look, if you're a Bills fan, I think you look at more on what happened in Foxborough 3 weeks ago as that was a real game. And you probably are telling yourself that, you know, on that Monday night I was there at the game on the sidelines filming it, that you kind of say Mother Nature beat you when the Patriots beat the Bills with just throwing three passes. So I think you are confident. It's just a sense of you never want to be too confident with Bill Belichick on the other sideline.
Now, we mentioned it, played the clip coming in from Diggs. It's going to be cold, but it's not going to be like that Monday, right?
No, it's not supposed to be this gale force winds of, you know, 45 miles per hour. It was crazy that Monday night. And that, you know, they talk about it, you know, it's the wind that affects the passing game so much. It's supposed to be a really clear and, you know, maybe 10 miles per hour of wind, nothing really to factor. It's just supposed to be really cold. It seems like every time I check the forecast, it gets colder. I don't know about you guys, but they're talking about a high of zero Saturday night. So I went today and bought $25 worth of hand warmers and foot warmers to prepare myself for Saturday night.
Yeah, layer up. It should be a good one. And as you say, anytime a team plays you three times in a year, it could be interesting. And let's dive in a little bit on the Bills side. I guess overall on the season, now the regular season is in the rearview mirror, but 11 wins. They win the AFC East for the second consecutive year. Is that about what you expected? Did the Bills play below expectations? Because before the season, there was a lot of hype about Josh Allen and the Bills, and it was a very up-and-down year for them. They finished off very strong, obviously, and got to 11 wins. But, you know, when you look back at the year, Dan, was it about what you expected for the Bills in 2021?
It's a great question. I think it's almost – they probably underachieved in the massive, massive expectations, though, that were here in Western New York. And I think that that's part of the problem is that for 20 years, this Bills team had zero expectations. So then you go into last year, Josh Allen and the Bills offense light the world on fire. Josh finishes second in the MVP voting, gets a contract extension worth $250 million. And I think a lot of people expected the Bills to just continue to get better and better. And the one thing that I was worried about before the season is that Josh Allen could still have a really good year, a really solid year, and it would still be kind of good as last year just because of how phenomenal he was. And guys, look, success and growth and development isn't just linear. It's not like every single player just gets better year after year after year after. It just doesn't happen. Otherwise everybody would be Hall of Famers. So I think what the problem is that the expectations were so high with this Bills offense. You know, they would just score and it'd be a breeze. You know, a lot of guys talked about it these last few weeks when we talked to the players about how challenging this year was compared to last year. And they all said last year, like Stephon Diggs was talking about it, that like it was smooth sailing. Like everything kind of went right. Yeah, they lost to the Chiefs twice and, you know, they lost on a Hail Mary to the Cardinals. But besides that, they pretty much just dominated teams and it was easy. And this year it has been a struggle. Look, they lost to Jacksonville. They lose to Pittsburgh week one. They lose that bad Monday night game, you know, to Mac Jones only throwing three passes. So it's been a challenging year filled with some really ugly lows. And I think fans are mad and kind of going, well, what the heck? And guys, when we look at it, you look at the team at the end of the year, and to some respects, these numbers don't lie. The Bills have the number one rated defense and they have the number three rated offense. Like people are wondering if Josh Allen took a step back this year and they're still the third highest scoring offense in the NFL. People are acting like Brian Daboll's this terrible offensive coordinator. He's going to get a ton of head coaching offers. He's probably going to be head coach next year. And they underachieved with the third highest scoring offense in the league. That is how it's crazy with the expectations that came into this season.
We always talk about teams playing well at the right time and getting hot at the right time. Mm-hmm. You look at the Bills' last four games, Dan. only one of them against playoff caliber teams. Is that a concern for this coaching staff? You know, wins against the Panthers, the Falcons, the Jets. Obviously, beating the Patriots in Foxborough is massive, but, you know, you win four in a row and you're feeling good, but is there a concern about that strength of schedule down the stretch?
Yeah, I think so. I definitely think a little bit. And this goes back to even five games ago. This goes back to their come-from-behind loss in Tampa Bay, where they were getting blown out in the first half, rallied to tie the game in the second half, and then lost in overtime. And the team has really talked about that game being the turning point. And even Josh Allen had a Freudian slip in the postgame press conference. He says, a win like this, I mean a loss like this, can kind of give us a boost of energy. And they said something clicked in that second half, and they've played better since then. You know, Josh Allen probably had the best game of his entire NFL career in Foxborough, was 3 weeks ago. And then, you know, he kind of talks about how this has been, you know, playoff caliber. And I've said that, you know, in January, there are no stylish wins. There's no moral wins. There's no statement wins. There's just wins. And Josh kind of talked about how they've been playing in the playoffs for the last 4 weeks. And I've attributed it to maybe like the NCAA tournament. Like, it doesn't matter how you beat the 14th seed or the 15th seed.
Right.
Just beat them. Beat them and get on to the next weekend. So I feel like they've been kind of in that mentality because Josh hasn't played well the last 2 weeks offensively. When they beat the Falcons, it was a snowy day, and he really didn't throw the ball well. He ran it well. And then last week against the Jets, they really kind of stalled out in the second half. So there is some concern. I've been asked about that on a couple different radio stations this week. And just saying, where's your level of concern? I'd say about 25%, because Josh had a stretch last week on Sunday. They had seven straight incompletions, which is unlike him. And they weren't just incompletions, guys. They were like nowhere on the same page with Gabriel Davis or Stephon Diggs or Dawson Knox. And that was concerning to me, because I didn't need them to beat the Jets by 30 points, but I wanted them to look a little bit more competent offensively.
He is Dan Fates from 13 Wham in Rochester. He covers all things Bills, and he's our guest here on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Logan?
Dan, it seems like it's been a back and forth as to who is running back number one for the Buffalo Bills. It seemed as though Devin Singletary and Zach Moss were always fated to seemingly split carries for this team. And then down the stretch, strong performances from Devin Singletary seem to have handed him that job. Are they going into Saturday's matchup with the Patriots with Devin Singletary as the guy behind Josh Allen?
Yeah, absolutely. He's really emerged these last 3 to 4 weeks. And again, he kind of got it going a little bit in the second half of that Tampa Bay game, ripped off a couple 15-plus yard runs. And this has been a team that has really struggled to run the ball this year. They have had a mixing and shuffling of an offensive line due to injuries, due to COVID, due to everything in between. And they really haven't been able to get anything going on the ground. And I've been one of the guys that says, just throw the ball 75 times a game. Like, you have Josh Allen. And I've always said, this team will go as far as Josh Allen takes them. They was the similar thing to last year. I think it's the same way this year. But having Devin Singletary have a little bit of confidence, the fact that that handing the ball off isn't necessarily an automatic negative play or a 0 yard, you know, 1 yard gain, has given this offense just another dynamic. It's made defenses just not be able to have their defensive ends rush off the corner and just go and get Josh. They've had to kind of second guess. It's given Josh a little bit more time, and it's made this offense more well-rounded. But Devin Singletary has emerged over these last 3 weeks, like you said, as the go-to clear-cut number one guy.
How important has Dawson Knox been to this offense this year? Just 25 years old now, his third season with the Bills, but you're going to look at his receiving numbers and go, two touchdowns in year one, three in year two, nine this season. The yardage has been a big explosion too, but I mean, nine touchdowns, it's pretty clear from an outsider's perspective that this has become a guy that Josh Allen trusts in the red zone.
Yeah, and he absolutely had to earn it, Logan. Look, this was a guy that last year when the Bills had their end-of-the-year press conference, Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, the Bills GM and head coach, both called out their tight end play, like blatantly. Like, they saw the way that Travis Kelce in the AFC Championship game last year just destroyed them. And it was going into this offseason, I don't know if you guys remember, all of the talk was, will the Bills go and trade for Zach Ertz? Will they trade for Zach Ertz? All preseason, we're asking Dawson Knox, hey, what are you hearing about the Zach Ertz rumors? What are you hearing about this? And he said that he worked so hard in the offseason, and I always laugh at that because you're never going to have a guy come in, talk to the media, being like, yeah, I was lazy this offseason. Like, and everybody gets all excited. Everybody in the offseason is in the best shape of their life, and they're about to have their best season of their careers, right, guys? And so, but Dawson Knox has really done that. He said he went to a bunch of hand-eye coordination specialist and did all of these things. And he's really turned into a guy that Josh can depend on. The 9 touchdowns has been massive. He's become a red zone target. He's limited his drops, which were a big concern his first 2 seasons. And this was a guy that was a high school quarterback. So he didn't start playing tight end until he went to Old Miss, dealt with injuries. He's a guy that, to most respects, is still learning how to play tight end, which is never easy to pick up, you know, try and fine-tune a position that you've only been doing for 3 to 4 years at the NFL caliber level. And it's funny because there's been so much attention put to Stephon Diggs that it's almost like, especially early on in the year, teams just didn't respect Knox. And so he was just wide open for touchdowns. And earlier in the year, Stephon Diggs says that he was the most expensive and valuable decoy in the Bills offense in the NFL this year. And that he said that all the money that Dawson's going to make, Diggs gets a cut of it, because there'd be 3 guys covering Diggs and then Dawson Knox would be wide open. So he's become this valuable piece and kind of become that safety net that the really good NFL offenses have. Look, he's not a Darren Waller. He's not a Kelsey. He's not a Kittle. But they needed something more than what he was his first 2 years, and he's become that for the Bills this season.
I wanted to talk to you specifically about one other offensive player and sort of how his presence may or may not affect what the Bills do on Saturday, and that's Emmanuel Sanders, who I thought started the season off very strong, looked like a very reliable number 2 option and sort of take some pressure off of what Stephon Diggs was doing deep under the field. You could rely on Emmanuel Sanders for sort of that short underneath stuff. Dan, his numbers tailed off. He was hurt here late in the year and didn't make much of an impact down the stretch. Sounds as though he's practicing in full. How much of a presence or change is it for that Bills offense if Sanders is at 100% and ready to go against the Patriots?
He's just that safety net. Look, he had a play a few weeks ago in the New England game. He sprained his knee in the Tampa Bay game 5 weeks ago. He missed a week, and then he did gut it out for the New England game because they were already short Gabriel Davis as well as Cole Beasley that week due to COVID. So they needed Sanders to play, and he did. And then he's missed the last 2 weeks just because I think he tried to gut it out through a sprained knee. He's 35 years old, and he's just been battling through it. He's a veteran. I know that Stephon Diggs is there too, but Sanders really brings a calming feature to this Bills offense. Like, he's the mature adult in the room, no offense to Stephon Diggs, but he's the guy. And I've always thought he's an excellent route runner. And such, like you said, a valuable guy that can play the slot, can play the outside. He's caught a couple deep balls earlier in the year. But to me, it's just his calming presence when he's on the field. He had one of the best quotes earlier in the year, guys, when they were talking about right away the Bills lose to the Steelers, right, week 1. And Sanders talked about how that's life in the NFL, that everybody thinks you're great when you're winning, and then when you lose, everybody thinks you're the worst. And he goes, the quote of the year was, he had said pretty much along the lines of, when you lose, everybody thinks you'll never win again, and when you win, people think you're the greatest thing since milk was invented. And I thought that was the best quote I've ever heard. And just the fact of, if he's knee, they've given him extra time to recover. If he can be that guy, I think he adds that wild card element that we haven't seen the last few weeks to really kind of get this passing game to another level. Because when the Bills played New England last time, the wild card was Isaiah McKenzie. He was the one that came out of nowhere, out of the slot with 11 catches for 125 yards and the touchdown. That was his game. And it was almost like the Bills kind of had Belichick guessing because they didn't have Cole Beasley or Gabriel Davis. So what were they going to do? It was McKenzie. This week it could be, well, Sanders hasn't played in a few weeks. What's he got? He could be the wild card this Saturday.
On the defensive side of the ball, to me, when I look at this Bills defense, the first guy that I think of, and if he has a big game, is going to be important to the Bills. For me, it's a linebacker, and it's Tremaine Edwards, number 49. He doesn't have a sack on the year. I think he has 1 interception. But this is a guy that I believe a couple of times this year, Dan, has played every single defensive snap in a number of games for the Bills. He's 23 years old. and it's amazing to see what he's done at such a young age. But to me, he's such a key for this Bills defense. And I think when you're talking about cold weather game and you're talking about a hard-nosed game against the New England Patriots, this stands out as a guy to me that's going to be so important for the Bills. Am I right to say that? I mean, it sounds like a lot of pressure for a 23-year-old on a division-winning team, but that's how important, at least I look at Edmonds for the Bills.
Yeah, it's so funny you talk about how young he is, because he's been, I think this is his fourth year in the league. He's made two Pro Bowls, and it's so funny we still talk about how young he is. Like, he's been in the league now in 4 years. He's been a signal caller and the captain of the Bills defense now, making all those calls. And we always say, like, when he misses a play around the, you know, around Western New York, we say, hey, so young. Like, the Bills drafted two guys this year that were older than Tremaine Edmonds. They drafted rookies that were older than Tremaine Edmonds, who's been in the league for 4 years. But that is actually it, because the Patriots and the way Mac Jones is playing, they're going to challenge the Bills to stop the run. That's what they're going to have to do. Look, even when Mac Jones wasn't great, when the Bills beat them in Foxborough, they still had three rushing touchdowns. It is going to come down to Tremaine Edmonds filling the gaps. He's a massive human being. Like, he's 6'5", 250. Like, he runs like a wide receiver. Robert Saleh of the Jets last week said he's like Bigfoot. Like, he's just such a rare breed of a person. The problem is that he's struggled at times in coverage, and sometimes he's over-pursued. I'm with you. He doesn't have a sack on the year, but whenever he blitzes, it usually leads to something good for the Bills. Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott, they're not heavy blitzing guys, but whenever they blitzed, it kind of worked. It's almost like offenses are so surprised when they actually do it, they catch them off guard. The Bills had 9 sacks last week, and going off of what you talked about with how important Tremaine Edmonds is, Micah Hyde talked about how confidence is a hell of a drug. And this is a Bills defense that's really feeling good about themselves, as well as, like I said, stopping the run, what they did last week against the Jets. I know it's the Jets, but guys, they still held them to 4 first downs and sacked Zach Wilson 9 times. Those guys still get paid to play football. It was still an impressive defensive showing, and that's what it's going to be. Bill Belichick is going to challenge them to stop the run. He's not going to put the ball in Mac Jones' hands. The Bills need to stop the run and force Mac Jones to be the guy that's going to beat him.
He is Dan Fates. A few more with him. All things Bills for 13 WHAM in Rochester, and kind enough to give us some time this afternoon. Bills Patriots 6:15 kickoff Calgary time from Buffalo, as these two teams go at it for a third time this season. What you just talked about, the tail end of that answer, is kind of leading into what I was just going to talk about, because when you play a team for the third time, there's not a lot of secrets. Yeah. And I know you mentioned that, you know, it's not going to be the crazy winds and the crazy snow that we saw in that Monday night game in Orchard Park. But obviously in that game, the Patriots are able to run it down the Bills' throat. How much is that a focus for this defense? And as much as Mac Jones has had a good season, I think when a lot of people look at this Patriots team, they say if they're going to go in the playoffs and go far, Mac Jones has got to make 2 or 3 really good throws, and they don't have the confidence to do that. I'm sure the Bills feel the same way. What's important for Buffalo when it comes to stopping Damien Harris in this running attack?
Yeah, it's simple, and it's something it's silly. It's one of Sean McDermott's cliches that he uses all the time. It's what he calls gap integrity. We hear it all the time. But look, the Patriots offensive line are massive human beings. Like, it's funny. Like, when people are like, how come the Bills can't run the ball? Well, their 5 offensive linemen are built to pass protect. They're a lot leaner. They're not guys. Trent Brown for the Patriots is one of the biggest human beings I've ever seen in person. He's like 6'9". He's a head taller than everybody else. 365 and runs faster than all 3 of us, guys. Like, they are built to move large human beings and run over them. That's what they're built to do. So this comes down to, like you said, it's Tremaine Edmonds. And in the first meeting, when they ran the ball 40-plus times, Mac Jones only threw it 3 times. They ran for 260-odd yards, and, you know, that was the game where after it, a reporter asked Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer if they were embarrassed to lose a football game when the other team only threw the ball 3 times. And that kind of angered the Bills. You know, they took that personally. This is a Bills defense that doesn't think they're well-respected. They're the number 1 defense, and we told them that after the game against the Jets, and they said, oh, wow, the Bills? No way. We can't be the number 1 defense because nobody ever thinks we're any good. This is a team that has a chip on their shoulder, and it's going to come down to what Logan said with Tremaine Edmonds stopping the run. And another kicker, you talked about Tremaine Edmonds being that key factor, Logan. Another guy that's in there is another linebacker in A.J. Klein. A.J. Klein tested positive the Monday of that first meeting when they played on the Monday night. He is their bigger linebacker. He's the one that comes in when they sub in to go to 3 linebackers, because normally it's just Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano. Milano more of the coverage guy. So when they bring in A.J. Klein, he's a really physical downhill linebacker that can plug up gaps and stop the run. They did a pretty good job against the Patriots the last time they played, and Klein was a big reason why. So So, again, you talked about Tremaine Edmonds being this freak in the middle of the Bills defense. A.J. Klein's another guy that's really important that nobody's going to talk about, but at the end of the day, he could be a key piece to stopping this Patriots running attack that, look, they're not going to try and do anything fancy. They're just going to try and run the ball. It's a very simplistic offense. They're just going to try and do the same things over and over again, and it's up to the Bills to kind of man up and get some stops.
Dan, this has been great. Just kind of a final one on the way out. You mentioned it early in our conversation, a lot of talk about Brian Daboll and the fact that he's probably going to leave this Bills coaching staff. What about on the defensive side and Leslie Frazier? I know he's been asked a couple of times a couple of head coaching interviews. Is Sean McDermott preparing to lose a couple of guys off his staff here this offseason?
Yeah, we all thought it was going to happen last year. And I know people inside the league that Brian Daboll was really surprised when he didn't get the L.A. Chargers job, and that went to Brandon Staley. And look, I think Daboll goes this year. I cannot say enough good things about Brian Daboll, his play calling. It's easy to point fingers at offensive coordinators when things don't go well, and it's the easy scapegoat, especially around Western New York guys. You can't criticize Josh Allen. If Josh Allen throws an interception, it's Brian Daboll called the wrong play. That's how it works around here. But Brian Daboll has turned Josh Allen in 4 years from a project out of Wyoming who really didn't know what he was doing to an MVP caliber quarterback. And Daboll deserves a good portion of that credit. Now, Josh is a freak, but that goes with it. On the defensive side, Leslie Frazier is an adult. And I think that's a big thing that when Sean McDermott got the job in Buffalo, they had Rex Ryan, right? And he was just kind of a loose cannon. And when they hired Sean McDermott, things settled down because he was an adult in the room and he took control of things. That's what I think. If you get Leslie Frazier, and I know he's talking to the Bears. I know he's talking to the Dolphins, I believe, is the other one. He would be a slam dunk for the Chicago Bears hire. So that's why I think they won't do it, because that would mean the Chicago Bears would do the right move. But Leslie Frazier would bring so much stability to an organization. He brings a pedigree. And, again, the big thing, too, we talked about this being the number one rated defense Buffalo has. And you always kind of think Sean McDermott has his hand in that. We asked Sean McDermott after the game against the Jets, what does it mean to you, Sean, to have the number one ranked defense? And Sean said, it's not my defense. It is Leslie Frazier's defense. It is all him. I am just there to oversee things, but it is Leslie that deserves all the credit. That is a big ringing endorsement from a defensive coach who could easily take the credit and say, yeah, that's awesome. But to give Leslie that ringing endorsement, I think says a lot about what they built in Buffalo, as well as the amount of credit that Leslie Frazier deserves. I think they both deserve head coaching jobs.
Man, it must be nice to be Josh Allen. We worth $250,000 or $250,000,000,
yeah.
Sorry, and never pay for a meal or a drink in Buffalo. It's a pretty good life.
Not at all.
If you're Josh Allen. Dan, good stuff, man. This was fantastic, and I'm sure we'll check in again as the Bills look to go further in the NFL playoffs. Have fun on Saturday, and appreciate the time today.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
You bet. There is Dan Fates, 13 Wham in Rochester, covering all things Bills, and he joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Man, that was a good chat, and that's going to be a fun game on Saturday night between the Bills and the Patriots. We got to get out of here. Pat Steinberg's in the house. Flames talk at the top of the clock. All things Calgary Flames. Can you believe it? It's an eve of a game day. Yeah, they actually play games. It's weird. I know it's been rare. But they're going to play a game tomorrow, by all accounts. Fingers crossed. Knock on wood. Whatever you want to say. Flames talk coming up next. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.